Welcome to the For the Church podcast, another great gospel-centered resource from Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. My name is Jared Wilson. I'm an assistant professor of pastoral ministry and author in residence at Midwestern Seminary. And I'm here as always with my friend and my colleague and my co-host and traveling man, Ross Ferguson. You recently made a trip to Chicago area?
Yeah.
In the wintertime? What were you thinking?
Well, actually, I went to get our car repaired. Well, it wasn't getting repaired. It was just kind of getting a couple of things sorted out. And the guy said, so you said you were doing a road trip. Where are you going? And I said, oh, Chicago. And he went, oh, Ross, that's a summer trip, not a winter trip.
Uh-huh.
I went, I'll go when I want to go, thank you very much. But because it's a winter, we went in winter, I was actually really quiet. So I like going to places that are touristy in more quiet seasons. We went to Chicago. It's actually been on our list for quite a while to go and visit Chicago. Not too long a drive.
Yeah.
I think it was like 7.5, 8 hours or something like that.
Did you go in Chicago?
So we stayed in Wheaton. So one of our friends kindly gifted us the ability to stay in their house. So we stayed in Wheaton. So I was able to go and walk around Wheaton College.
See
a very beautiful building.
Did you see the wardrobe? Lewis's wardrobe was there.
I did not. Okay. We couldn't go inside because it was closed. So we kind of walked around the buildings. Yeah, we then went and did the tourist things, like went to go and see the Bean, went to the Shedd Aquarium Museum, the Field Museum. We went to the world's largest Starbucks, which was just basically a Starbucks with five different levels.
That's weird.
It literally is the world's largest Starbucks.
Okay.
Yeah. We walked down Michigan Avenue, did the River Walk, did the Navy Pier, walked around Moody Bible Institute. Yeah, we did a fair few things. But yeah, it's been on the list. We fly in and out of Chicago when we go back to the UK. And then for our period of our life, we were in North Dakota and we used Chicago as a base as well. So we've been in and out of that airport, I don't know, maybe 10 times. My mother probably maybe 20 times in her flights. And we had never stepped foot outside of the airport. And it was kind of one of those things, we really want to see the city.
Yeah.
So yeah, we drove up, spent 3 days in Chicago doing all the touristy type things.
Did you do it's not called the Sears Tower anymore, but
there was
whatever the Sears Tower?
Not a chance I was going up that.
Really?
I don't really like heights.
Oh, okay.
So I looked at the video and just even watching people go towards the glass on the video was, I can't do it. The girls are like, we should do it. And I'm like, we are not doing that. So
I think they've even changed some things where like you kind of like suspend yourself over the glass or something?
So it leans out.
No. Okay.
And then because we're kind of collecting states, if you will, we actually drove from Chicago up into Wisconsin. And so we've now added Wisconsin to the states that we've been to. So we've been to 19 different states now. So just trying to kind of work our way through. Not quite sure where our next state will be.
When you're in Chicago, did you go to the Home Alone house?
Nope.
No. Did you go to the Ferris Bueller High School? You didn't go to the Breakfast Club High School?
No.
You didn't do any of the John Hughes movie stuff, the Home Alone church or anything?
We were there for 3 days.
Okay. That's what I would want to do. If I went to Chicago, all I'd want to see is all the movie sites.
The main thing we wanted to do was go to the aquarium because our girls really, really like aquariums and it's got beluga whales and all this sort of stuff.
There's a beluga whale in the aquarium?
There's seven of them.
Whoa. How big are beluga whales?
Pretty decent sized. They do like a whole show with
there's
dolphins.
A massive aquarium.
Yeah, there was a dolphin show and a beluga talk and all sorts of stuff.
Wow, I didn't know it'd be that big.
The food is dreadful in all of these places, just so that people are aware. But
like
snack
bar-y type stuff. Yeah,
And expensive. Yeah. But yeah, and I really wanted to do Michigan Avenue.
Okay.
Walk up and down it, and that was really cool to see. I'd seen some of them. We couldn't go in because there was a 2-hour long queue outside.
Whoa.
But a Nutella cafe.
Oh.
Yeah.
2 hours to get into the, I bet you would want to do that.
Yeah. And you can get personalized Nutella tubs and Nutella hot chocolates. And I was like, I really want to go. I've never seen this before. But the queue was so long. It was unbelievable.
That's crazy.
But yeah, we really enjoyed it. I have no idea where we're next. Well, we tend to go to, these are the states we go to. The places we're invited to speak and the places we know somebody so that our accommodation is free. I've done basically every state.
Where
I know
do you
want
to really go next? Like, what's the next thing on the list?
We know somebody in Alabama who might be able to give us accommodation.
Okay.
So we might do Alabama and Louisiana at the same time.
But is there like a state that you really want to go to and you're not sure if you know anybody?
We'd realize I'd go up towards New England.
Okay. Any New England listeners, We know people in New England, Mike Brooks. Yeah. We know some folks. Well, I've been at Mike Brooks' apartment. I don't know if they can put up your family, but they don't have enough space. But there's, you know, we know people. We have listeners up there. If you're up there and you want to hook up Ross and his family of five, give us a word. Let us know. Hey, you've got a place. That Ross and Miriam and the girls stay. My issue
is we know people in Philly. We know people in California. We know people in Alabama. Yeah. So we've got three locations. We are now beyond the driving point. We need to kind of move more towards flights. When we went to Denver, that was like 15 hours driving. No, that was like 13. And then when we did Wyoming, that was like 15, 16 hours of driving. I remember when we drove to Wyoming, I was like, I think we might need to start thinking about flying. Yeah. So then that's the issue. Is five of us is like $2,500, $3,000. It gets too expensive. But yes, I'm 19 states down and our current visa runs for a year.
Okay.
So it's kind of one of those things off. I have a lot of states to visit in a year.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know what we don't have a lot of is new reviews.
We don't.
We have one new review. So some of you guys just are not getting the pressure that I really want you to feel in reviewing this podcast.
Maybe
I'm going to assume this is superstar comedian and actor Kevin Hart. Kevin Hart gave us a 5-star review. He says, this is a great podcast for anyone who loves the local church, Ross's takes on Christian movies notwithstanding. Jared and Ross have fun with each other and fun with the subject matter while offering wisdom and insight into a wide array of matters concerning the church. Now that I gave you my gift, did you guys get me anything? Yes, Kevin, we got you a free podcast.
Yeah, we don't charge for this.
Every week, fresh content just for you. Never asked for anything in return except for reviews.
Do you know, have you ever seen, I think it's the company Patreon. I think that's what it is, where people like give money to and everything. I'm not saying we should do that.
Okay.
But quite a lot of people will put will put your name on the wall if you give something. Do we need to do like a review wall where your name will go on the wall
best review
in the podcast room? It's just empty wall.
Yeah.
So maybe we could be like, we'll take if you put a review on, we'll put your name on the wall and you will
We probably have to get approval from some higher ups to do that because this is in the Spurgeon Library.
Ask for forgiveness. Don't ask for permission. You know, that's the way to go.
Speaking of ways to go, we're talking about ways of church, the ways churches go today. Mega church versus micro church is the snazzy topic, but I just thought we'd talk about the pros and cons of big churches and little churches. And sometimes they get pitted against each other, maybe rightly, but also probably wrongly. There are people who definitely have preferences, and usually your preference for, which is fine for a small church or a large church, sometimes leads you to think differently or poorly. Mm. Upon the opposite, right? Every now and again, we'll have folks who come through the new members class at Liberty. And when we ask, hey, you know, what drew you to Liberty Baptist Church or what brought you here? Every now and again, you'll hear somebody say, oh, I was at a church, it just got too big. And, and you're like, oh, like, preference is fine, but I get a little nervous when somebody says something like that. Because number one is sort of like, well, is that a good reason to leave a church because it got big? You know, maybe something's happened as it got big that would be good reasons, but just the size. And it also makes me nervous to say like, well, what happens if we get bigger? Yeah. You know, at what point are you going to jump out of this ship? You know?
Yeah.
And so I just think we have these, preferences that sometimes lead us to having unfair characterizations.
Yeah.
I think that's true of a lot of megachurch guys as well. Mm. They look down small. You small church guys obviously don't have it figured out.
Yeah.
Or your church would be bigger. You don't know what I know or can do what I do. Right?
This feels like a pet peeves episode in disguise.
Kind of.
You know what I'm saying? In disguise.
But I'm trying to help megachurches think more positively about small churches and small churches think more positively about megachurches.
There's a really good book that I read on, it's mainly on leadership models, but I think it's a really good book that talks about different sizes of church, and it's called Ready, Steady, Grow, Equipping Today's Gospel Churches, and it's by Ray Evans. He works with the FIEC in the UK, and he basically defines multiple sizes of churches it's mainly in the UK where you can change the numbers for the US. US churches do tend to be a little bit bigger than the UK. And he'll talk about, you know, the family run church, which is basically just a few people and a family's running everything. Yeah. The small church, which is still the family kind of doing everything, but with a few extra leaders. The medium sized church that's kind of like 100, 150, starting to grow. It's got leadership, it's got structure. He then talks about an awkward church size, which is kind of between the medium and the large, where the family still want to be really involved. The leadership structure is there, but it's that awkward size of you need a lot more structure, a lot more development, but you don't quite yet have the people to do all those things. And then he starts talking about the very large church and the mega churches. And one of the things, as he does that definition all the way through, which is really helpful, is he kind of talks about the positives and negatives as you go up into different sizes. Mm. Where, for instance, let's just take pastoral care as a option. In a small church, small family church, micro church, if you will, that's really easy to do. There's less people to go around.
Yeah.
You get to know them at a much deeper level, and therefore you can visit them on a fairly regular basis. You can have fairly intensive pastoral care. The negative of that, though, is that that can be very wearing on the pastor, that actually he is always needed and it finds very hard to actually disconnect sometimes and rest. The opposite is true for the megachurch. Pastoral care is very difficult. There's a lot of people. You're going to have to use teams. You don't necessarily, in using those multiple teams, get across everybody. It's hard to give intensive pastoral care. But on the flip side, it means that you, because of the size, you actively have to pass some of this on to others, and therefore you're not on the hook for the whole thing. So just on one simple subject of pastoral care, both sides have positives and both sides have negatives.
Yeah.
And it's just learning that actually neither is right and neither is wrong. It's having to learn how to adapt to the size of your church while giving effective pastoral care. That's the key issue. Yeah. But Ray Evans is really good at kind of just explaining through those sizes. For me, again, just staying on pastoral care, sweet spot is the kind of medium-sized church of kind of 100 to 250. That's kind of a sweet spot where you're going to get other people involved in pastoral care, but you're still fairly intensive in it. As it goes smaller, I tend to feel overwhelmed by it just because I feel so much pressure to do it. As we get bigger, I tend to feel like I'm not really doing my job well enough because I don't really know people. So just a sweet spot. And so sometimes the sweet spot is actually bang in the middle.
Yeah. You know, also, you can find this online. Tim Keller has an article, kind of a white paper on size dynamics. And I think we actually did a podcast episode about
possibly.
On leadership size dynamics, where, you know, basically he walks through different sizes of churches as the church grows and how the leadership must conceive of itself or conduct itself, how it changes. And so it's kind of to your point, when the church is smaller, the pastor, he describes as more of a generalist, sort of a general practitioner.
Yeah.
And that's fine because you've got, you know, you can be available to everybody. But then as the church grows, he says the pastor becomes more of a specialist because you have to delegate more and you're not able to be, you know, on for everybody. You have to become more complex. And so the, you know, pastor can become more of a specialist and stay, you know, more, I guess, in a particular lane. That's helpful, but also just thinking through, I think one thing for our listeners to kind of, you know, help them walk through is just how a church itself can change, pros and cons.
Yeah.
In a smaller church, for instance, one of the pros, I think, is that sense of community where everybody kind of knows everybody, not always, but more often than in larger churches. There's just a sense of family connection, maybe more, you know, more fingers in the pie, more, you know, cooks in the kitchen, more hands on deck and that sort of thing. The danger with that, sort of the con to that then, is that sometimes it's harder for outsiders to kind of find their way in, right? You show up and you're kind of like, oh, these people are like, they're a family. Yeah. They're really tight. And it's, where's my place? How do I fit in? And some people find it easier to get in than other people. And, you know, and so sometimes it's harder for people to kind of enter that sphere. Mm-hmm. In a larger church, it may be easier to sort of get in, right? You can kind of come, be anonymous. You can kind of take in the experience or what have you. But it's harder to experience community because there's so many people and you may not see them. Maybe there's four or five different services. Yeah. And how do I get to know people here? And that's something that is a routine sort of you know, complaint of folks who leave larger churches or who are in larger churches unhappy is just like, there's not a sense of community here. Yeah. It's just sort of a consumer experience. We come to take in this program and then
it's that sense of belonging. So, so in a smaller church, you feel like you belong because you're part of the family. Now that's if you get in, so to speak. And it's also the reason why in smaller churches, those squabbles over small ministry matters become actually usually quite large, because actually you really belong. This is my church family. How dare we go this way? Or we shouldn't go that way. We should do this. So it becomes more intense, which is why those squabbles, you know, that's a real intensive pastor, general practitioner that you need, because they need to be able to manage all those things. In the mega church or just even a larger church, you don't necessarily belong as a family. You almost belong to the entity, to the church. Yeah. You know, if somebody says, oh, where do you go? Oh, I go to that church. And they work in a ministry or they're in the choir or something like that. And if you say to someone, oh, what church you go to? They might go, oh, I lead a small group in said church. And they belong to the identity of that church. Now, that's not to say that that's necessarily something wrong. It's to say that that then has a different approach in their sense of community. Their sense of community is, I'm part of the big thing. I know I'm a tiny piece in the big thing, but that does mean that if that tiny piece isn't going particularly well, it's just so much easier for those individuals just to leave and go and feel belonging somewhere else. Because this is not about a family, this is about, I'm part of this entity, this church. And so I think the larger church has a big struggle with trying to bring people together into community. Miriam and I attended a church in London when we lived in London. For London, it was a big church, 1,000 people. That's pretty huge in the UK. And they had 4 services on a Sunday because they're building. And we went to the young people's service in the evening. And we felt belonging to the young people because that's our service. And we were in our early 20s at the time with no kids. But when we were struggling with work or with family or anything like that, the sense of belonging just wasn't there because we went to the young people service, but not the church. They weren't our family. It was the name of the church was our thing. And I think this also applies when you say a sense of a family. I think we know that scripture teaches us that we're to view each other as mother, father, brother, sister.
Yeah.
And so if I was to give any counsel on this, whether a small church or a large church, that's the thing we want to be promoting within the church body, is that we're a family. So a larger church, you're going to struggle with this a little bit more. But that means you just have to some extent, be more aware of it and more effort into pulling away the identity of the big name, the organization, and really promote that the belonging of a family in Christ.
Yeah. Midwestern Seminary is pleased to announce the launch of FTC Talks. FTC Talks presents the opportunity to hear from Midwestern Seminary professors about their area of expertise and asks them any questions you want. It's completely online and it's free. We have an array of FTC Talks scheduled for the spring, including a talk on gospel-driven ministry with myself and Midwestern's preaching professor, Dr. Jared Bumpers. That's on March 26th at 12 p.m. What does the gospel have to do with pastoral ministry? Is there a particular way to pastor that is gospel-centered? In this FTC talk, Dr. Bumpers and myself will discuss gospel-centered ministry and everything from pastoral health and pastoral care to how to know when your ministry veers off track. Not only will you be equipped to minister the gospel from a place of health through this conversation, but you'll also receive personal encouragement from men who have practiced gospel-centered pastoral ministry for decades. We hope you'll join us for this special conversation. It's March 26th at 12 p.m. There'll also be a time for Q&A so we can interact with you. You can learn more about all of the FTC talks and sign up to participate in these free resources by going to mbts.edu/FTC talks. That's mbts.edu/FTC talks.
One of the compare contrast things I like to do also is how each larger church, smaller church approaches the area of sort of what we might call excellence You know, in a smaller church, you overlook a lot of things. Oh, that's just so-and-so.
Especially in the worship team.
In the worship team, just the aesthetic, whether things are tidy, whether things look aesthetic, welcoming.
Yeah.
Signage.
Yeah.
You know, everyone knows where to go. Like, well, no, they don't, especially if they're a visitor, right?
Yeah.
Like things you don't really think through when you're a smaller church sometimes, mm-hmm. not always, but sometimes, you know, people who don't present
yeah.
very well, who probably shouldn't be on stage, all those sorts of yep. things. And well, we're all, a, you know, we're all a family. We know each other. We love each other. We overlook each other's flaws. No big deal.
Yeah.
In a larger church, you tend to have more of a premium put yep. on production, mm-hmm. excellence, et cetera. And there's pros and cons to each of those things, right? You know, pursuing excellence can be an idol. It can also be a means of doing your work as unto the Lord and, yep. and you know, not being lazy and those sorts of things. In the larger church, the danger in that is that, you know, you create an environment where people feel like they have to
yeah.
be all put together and yeah. look great or perfect or pretty or whatever it is because of this show that you put on,
yeah.
it reinforces the idea in people that they have to look a certain way yeah. or be a certain way. I mean, I can tell you, you know, our church is not tiny. I wouldn't call our church a micro church, but it's a normative, it's a small church.
I would place it medium to large.
Okay, medium.
But that's because of my background.
Okay. Well, compared to where I come from in New England, it's large as well. But yeah. we're like, we run like 250, maybe 280, something like that. So there's people listening that are like, oh, that's bigger than mine. But there's probably a few that are like, oh, that's not big at all.
Yeah.
But anyway, when I go and speak someplace at a large church, yeah. like I just notice
yep.
the difference, mm-hmm. right? Especially when they got lights and stuff going on the stage yeah. and everything.
Yep.
And that's fine. Like people have their preferences. I'm not trying to, you know, yeah. you know, talk anti, but it just sort of in some ways kind of takes me out of it.
Yeah.
I sometimes think like, why are you doing this? And yeah. it's usually because there's other churches in the area that are mm-hmm. doing that as well. And you got to have a, you know, you got to, you know, be competitive. And
yeah.
there are people who like that style, I suppose, yeah. visitors who are impressed by that sort of thing. But I also just think, man, how much time and energy is put into mm-hmm. this production
yeah.
that is completely, you know, beside the point.
I think the key word here is distraction. So I yeah. think either a large, big production that's got to be perfect can be a distraction. We went to a fairly large church to visit it, and I was so distracted by all the cameras and, you know, there was boards and lights everywhere yeah. and everything was pitch perfect, everything. And it felt like a concert. Now that's to me, for others, it would have felt normal, but it was distracting how perfect it was. On the opposite side, especially in smaller churches, and I've served in church revitalization where, for instance, our worship group was one older lady of 80 playing yeah, yeah. the organ, do you know, is that kind of thing, all the way up to growing worship teams and all these sorts of things. It can be a distraction when there isn't a yes. level of actually we want to give the best unto the Lord.
And, I totally agree.
And there is a reality is you can't sing. You know, it's like maybe having that conversation. And so in my last church in the UK, we were a small church when I took it on. It was probably a micro church by this standard, 40-ish people. And by the time I left, it was maybe like 140, 150. And our worship team went from 1 to 15. And then we had, like we split it into two teams type thing and they would rotate. And that took time. And part of the time was to say to the church, these individuals are dusting off skills they haven't used for 30 years. Some of them are learning new instruments. Some of them have never sang in front of a group of people. We're slowly but surely introducing this. And I had to have some really difficult conversations along the lines of, you know, you're overpowering, you're actually distracting by the fact that you don't know the music and you know, that type of thing. We tried a couple of pianists and because of their nerves, they played badly. And so we then had to change things and it's distracting. Now, that's not to say that, you know, you've got to aim for perfection in either sense. Actually, in some of these big production, large churches, sometimes I wish they would make a mistake, like a screen doesn't work or something, because then it feels normal. In some of these smaller churches, I wish they would actually pay more attention to worship, to mm-hmm. who's leading, to who's praying, train them, help them, because clearly this is distracting. Or just even simple things like microphones that don't work. And if you have kids in school, and if you've ever been to assembly, the mic never works. It never works. And it yeah. bugs me. It's the same in the church.
Yeah.
If your mic doesn't work, don't let it be a distraction. Get it fixed.
Yeah.
In bigger churches, you don't need 27 cameras flying around the sky, you know, trying to shoot your best picture.
Yeah.
Have a more focused worship time. So yeah, distraction is the key word for me when it comes to, and here's the thing. This is every size of a church. But the problem is the mega churches think that they have to be perfect. The smaller churches just go, ah, we're too small. So, you know, we've got to lump it. And we've got to, again, come back to that middle ground of stop being distracting with these elements. Here's one I think that's a kind of different tact, is the element of flexibility. Do you feel as Liberty Baptist is growing, we've experienced this over the last few years, do you feel that flexibility is becoming harder as we're growing, or easier, or indifferent to it? And this is not to really talk about Liberty, more just a growing church.
Yeah, I think it's, we're in that growing pains sort of stage of, we're beyond the point of, we're not a small church anymore. We're not like that family church anymore. No. But people still want it to feel that way. Yeah. And they're going to miss, there's an angst about how it used to feel, which is a really crucial, you know, stage of growth for churches. Because this is why a lot of churches don't get beyond 300 to 400 or what have you. Assuming, you know, some people just don't care. I don't care if we grow, you know, beyond that. But some churches who, hey, whoever the Lord wants to send us. But there's a reason some churches don't grow beyond. It's because they're not able to adapt to, you know, larger church dynamics. And, you know, that's, I think, a challenge on both sides that, you know, I wanted to talk about as well, is when you're a larger church, mega church, you have more resources, you can try more things, you can experiment with services and service styles. But at some point it becomes this indiscriminatory, we're just innovating to, you know, for innovation's sake. And we sometimes, you know, we don't have a very good ecclesiology. So, like, I mean, we would be one service people in general, you know, convictionally. And so when you got like 6, 7, 8 services or whatever, like, you actually got 6, 7, 8 churches, you know. Well, let's launch a video venue. Let's launch it, you know. You get to the point where, like, if we can do it, let's do it.
Yeah.
And it's almost becomes an undiscerning, indiscriminate use of innovation. The challenge for the smaller church is they don't want to innovate at all. They don't want to, you know, take any risk. They don't want to have any change. And change is hard.
Yeah.
We like it the way it is. We're somewhat calcified. So it's sort of like contrasting, you know, challenges on either end. And I think our church is in that stage of, like, we enjoy growing. We like to grow. But we're still trying to figure out, like, okay, what do we let go of in terms of the small church stuff that we can't do anymore?
Yeah.
And what do we embrace that's actually not going to change our convictions about becoming a larger church? Yeah.
And I think this is where some partnership can really come in. I think often we're talking about small church, large church, what you should focus on, but there is levels of partnership that can happen here. So larger churches do tend to have more resources, and they do tend to feed those resources into, as you say, innovation for themselves. The extra services, the this is what we can do. I mean, I've watched churches, you know, replace all of their AV stuff with a brand new stuff every 5 years, do you know? And you just think, that's like hundreds of thousands to do that. But there's also innovation of signing checks to small churches and saying, actually, we want to partner with smaller churches in the area. We want to partner in church planting. You know, we could replace all of our chairs for brand new chairs after only using them for 6 years, or we could sign a check to 6 different church plants and pay for pastor salaries. The opposite is also true for the smaller churches. Rather than looking on those large churches as those evil big churches that's taking all your people, actually saying to people, hey, the big church down the road is doing a Christmas concert, or it's doing a doctrinal series on a Sunday night. We would love to kind of partner and take a bus load of folks down and be really blessed by local church ministry. And I think it's learning that it shouldn't be them and us. Rather, it should just be us. Yeah. It should just be us together. Now, I'm not talking crossing major doctrinal lines. I'm not talking being in partnership with churches that you feel are being unbiblical. I'm talking about just, like, if we have similar beliefs, why can't we enjoy it? And I'll give an example. Here in Kansas City, we do have a couple of fairly large gospel-centered focused churches. And at Christmas time, one of them put on a large Christmas concert. And our family went to it. We drove down to the church and really enjoyed it. We were really blessed by it. Went for a meal afterwards. It was just great to be part of it. And nothing was going on at Liberty, I believe, on that evening. And we really just enjoyed being blessed by another church's Christmas concert. Am I going to attend that church? No. But I've been in the building. I know friends that go to that church, and I'm really glad that I can picture and visualize where they are and I can pray for them. Now, was Liberty ever going to be able to put on a 300-person kind of choir concert? No, that's basically the size of our church. But we were able to go and get blessed. So one of the things I would just really encourage is, if you're a larger church with lots of resources, stop innovating within yourselves. See what you can do with those local churches around you. And if you're a smaller church, maybe think about how you can partner with larger churches, even if it's just, you know, as a pastor, connecting with the team there, asking for some help with website design because you've never really done that. Don't be ashamed of the church size, rather than, you know, almost embrace it and say, we need some help. Could you help us with a few mics that you might have left over because ours are awful and we need to replace them? You know, just start partnering a little bit more.
Yeah, I think the key is looking through the lens of the gospel, right? To embrace some grace, to have, you know, some charity towards one another. There are some stereotypical things. There are challenges that might lead us to be critical of small churches. There are some stereotypical things that might lead us to be critical of mega churches and larger churches. And it's natural to have preferences. It's, of course, good to have convictions about ecclesiological concerns. But let's look at our brothers and sisters in smaller and bigger churches with some charity. Mm. With that, we'll wind up the episode with a reminder to you about the Preaching and Preachers Seminar, which is coming up on February 24th at the Trails Church in Salina, Texas. This one-day seminar in North Dallas is designed for current and aspiring preachers and pastors, including men interested in and training for pastoral ministry or various forms of church leadership. The event will aim to sharpen expository preaching and encourage preachers and those aspiring to preach. In order to allow for as many pastors and men in ministry to attend with the limited spots we have, we are specifying that this event is just for men as we are expected to sell out. You can go to preachingandpreachers.org, preachingandpreachers.org, to find out more information about Midwestern Seminary's Institute for Preaching and Preachers and more information and registration information for this one-day workshop on February 24th, involves myself, Matt Boswell, and Afshin Ziafat, as well as a group work session for applying what you are learning in the day. We hope that you'll go and register for that. And also, we'll remind you of a new book out called Lest We Drift. Lest We Drift from Zondervan Reflective is available now. 5 Departure Dangers from the One True Gospel will help you and your church navigate the tendency for drifting from gospel centrality. Check out Lest We Drift wherever good books are sold. And as always, dear listener, if you enjoy the podcast, please give us a good review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. And until next time, may Jesus be big in your church. You've been listening to the For the Church podcast, hosted by Jared Wilson, found online at ftc.co. This resource is brought to you by Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Kansas City, Missouri, where we train leaders for the church.